Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, and good welcome to another episode of Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. And tonight, like every night and every morning, when Quest knocks at the door, it's time for you to wake up. And I start with our Quest moment. A cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium. And all vibrations possess a wave nature. You see, in our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our airwaves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. And I'd like to introduce our student host tonight, Walter Pierce. Good evening, Walter. This evening, our student host, Walter, will be presenting two diamond segments along with a definition. And I can't wait for him to chime in so that he can share with us the research that he has done in preparation for this evening's program. Let's see. Looks like we have other callers chiming in. Mr. Harris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Well, good evening to you. And Walter,
yes,
are you there?
Yes, good evening, everybody.
Okay, well, Walter, without any further ado, you've already been introduced, so take it away.
Yes, and for the first segment of today, I would like to introduce Don. And basically, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Looking into the diamond, you see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, you are bound to find it. And see, for today's diamond, I'm going to be talking a little bit about Jane Elliott. And to give a little background on Jane Elliott, she is a civil rights activist, and she's a white lady. And she had a method of teaching her children racism and doing an experiment on them the day after Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. So let's go into it. The assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968 prompted educator Jane Elliott to create the now famous Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes. As a school teacher in a small town of Riceville, Iowa, Elliott first conducted the anti-racist experiment on her all-white third-grade classroom the day after the civil rights leader was killed. She wanted them to understand what discrimination felt like. Elliott split her students into two groups based on eye color. She told them that the people with brown eyes were superior to those with blue eyes, for reasons she made up. Brown-eyed people, she told the students, are smarter, more civilized, and better than blue-eyed people. More than 50 years after she first tried that exercise in her classroom, Elliott, now 87, said she sees much more work left to do to change racist attitudes. The May 25th killing of George Floyd set off weeks of nationwide protests over the police abuse and racism against black people, plunging the U.S. into a reckoning of racial inequality. It's happening every day in this country right now, she said in an interview with Morning Edition. We are repeating the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise on a daily basis. When Elliott first conducted the exercise in 1968, brown-eyed students were given special privileges. She said she watched and was horrified by what she saw. The students started to internalize and accept the characteristics they've been assigned based on the color of their eyes. Elliott started to see her own white privilege, even her own ignorance. At her lunch break that day in the teacher's lounge, she told her colleagues about the episode. One teacher ended up displaying the same bigotry Elliot had spent the morning trying to fight. The interaction only strengthened Elliot's resolve. She decided to continue the exercise with her students after lunch. No person of any age was going to leave my presence with those attitudes unchallenged, Elliot said. 2 years later, in a BBC documentary, captured the experiment in Elliot's classroom. The demonstration has since been taught by generations of teachers to millions of kids across the country. Still, Elliot said the last few years have brought out America's worst racist tendencies. The empathy she worked to inspire in students with the experiment, which has been modified over the years, is necessary, she said. People of other color groups seem to understand, she said, probably because they have been taught how they're treated in this country, that they have to understand us. White people, on the other hand, don't have to understand. We have to let people find out how it feels to be on the receiving end of what we dish out so readily. But the protests happening now have given her hope. Things are changing, and they're going to change rapidly. If we're very, very fortunate, she says. If this ugly change, if this negative change can happen this quickly, why can't positive change happen that quickly? I think it can. And that concludes my piece on Elliot, Jane Elliot. Shout out to the NPR.org for providing this article. And yeah, Jane Elliot, you know, she's seen the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, and she started to understand her racial ignorance and how and the way she wanted to fight that was she wanted her students to start to understand that. So she created this exercise basically saying one group of kids is more powerful and more powerful than this other group, but the kids started to just accept their role, and that made her sad, and that put a disappointment on her face. So she said that the rest of her teaching career, that she doesn't want any of her kids leaving without being challenged by racism and challenged by understanding what racism actually is. And yeah, thank you everybody for listening.
Okay, well, don't go anywhere. Hold on. Mr. Harris, I know you're familiar with Jane Elliott, and I wondered if you have any comment or question to Walter.
Yeah, well, first let me say I've always applauded Jane Elliott for her attempt to at least expose what's going on systematically within this country. And I just wanted to ask Walter, do you think this type of thing is still necessary today? You know, even with this Black Lives Matter, protests going on and all of these counter groups doing stuff, you think this is still based on the kind of thing that Ms. Elliot was trying to expose in her classroom?
Yeah, I think it's still relevant. What she was teaching in her classroom then is still relevant now, because people still have these stereotypes, you could say, or these things that happen in society that people believe that, oh, this certain type of person is better than us. Like, you have to think about the blue-eyed, brown-eyed situation. She was saying that the brown-eyed people, she was just giving examples that the brown-eyed people are more powerful than the blue-eyed. You see that today where you probably think, oh, how people prefer, you know, people with lighter skin are more preferred than people with darker skin. They're less oppressed and they get more attention to people with darker skin. Women are more oppressed than most men, especially Black women are more oppressed than most men, and also white women. So just that exercise exposes the different types of thinking that race has in this country, that, oh, somebody's better than it. If you have this, you're better. If you have whiter skin, you're better. So I guess that still applies today.
Go ahead. You finish your statement.
No, because I was going to say, because, you know, these types of things are not only between the white population and the black population. We still have our issues amongst lighter and darker skins, like Walter was just saying, you know, within our community. We think that the lighter you are, the better you are. You know, it may reflect to that Spike Lee movie School Days between the wannabes and the jigaboos. This is a fight that we fight amongst ourselves. That's really, I think, is more of a problem than the kind of conflicts we have in with people outside of our community.
Well, I would say, as I chime in, right, I would say I'm going to quote Jane Elliott from a lecture that she had. And she said, you know, this society is predicated on a river. But the river is not just in Africa. It's the Nile River. It's denial. Denial of privilege over another people. It is denial that there is no such thing as white and black. There's only one type of race, and that's the human race. And this has everything to do with a miseducation and a stripping of one's knowledge of self. And that goes for quote-unquote, if you want to call yourself white or black. And people have been led to believe that the color of your skin creates something different about you. And the reality is, we all bleed red. We all are born. We all have an ending date. And at the end of the day, we're all human beings. But I want to thank you, Walter, and also Mr. Harris, for your comment and question. And I would like for Walter to please continue right on with your next segment.
Yes, and the next person I will be talking about today is Ella Baker. To document Ella Baker's life is to recount the history of the Civil Rights Movement. Whenever there was a cause to fight for a group to organize, this dedicated woman was there. Ella grew up and received her education in North Carolina. Upon graduating from Shaw University, she moved to New York City before the Depression of 1929. There, she became active in various causes. She worked briefly with the Work Project Administration, and then worked to end discrimination and organize labor through the NAACP. Ella was very involved with the NAACP as an organizer, an education director, and at one time, president of the New York branch. Ella went south in the 1950s to help the civil rights movement as it was developing in Alabama. With 30 years of organizing experience under her belt, Ella's advice to Martin Luther King Jr. And the other leaders of the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955 was invaluable. She stayed south to help Dr. King set up the headquarters of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. A few years later, she played an important part in helping to organize the student sit-in demonstration that were occurring all over the South. This activity led to the formation of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, one of the most powerful student activist movements formed in U.S. history. She also helped to found the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in 1966. 1964, which helped give African Americans in Mississippi more political power. Ella continues to serve as the godmother, the mentor of the SNCC as it moved to other human rights issues. Her greatest asset was her ability to organize and mobilize people for all generations. Although her name was not publicized as much as other male leaders, the civil rights movement would not have been the same without her. Shortly after her death in 1986, a documentary titled Fundy, The Story of Ellen Baker was aired on public television. Fundy is the Swahili word for a person who passes on skills to a younger generation. It is a fitting description of Ella Baker's legacy. Thank you.
So I have to ask you, you know what the question is, what motivated you to choose and speak about Ella Baker this evening?
Yes, and every week I'm going to continue the theme of bringing people who is not talked about a lot in society. A lot of African American parents who were in the civil rights movement who made a huge contribution but doesn't have a lot of notoriety. This is a prime example, Ella Baker. It even said that she didn't give as much attention as most of the male civil rights leaders. But what she did was so prominent is she helped organize a lot of the organizations that were to help push the civil rights movement. She was the main organizer. People looked to her for help, and especially the younger generation that was coming in looked for her for help because that was what she was about, passing on knowledge, continuing to give knowledge to the younger generation, which is very important for a movement. You have to make sure that everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah, you make a good point, Walter. When you talk about the civil rights movement and people who have little known acknowledgement in black history today, Ella Baker is one that stands out. You see, many black women were a part of the civil rights movement, but they did not get the recognition that many men were receiving. And when you look into history, you find out, unfortunately, Walter, that that was done deliberately. Someone felt that men should take the lead and women should fall back as far as the civil rights movement for change was concerned. But in today's society, 2020, we know that things are much different. And at this point, I would like to ask, of course, Mr. Harris, to chime in with, once again, a question or a comment.
Yeah, Ella Baker, that was a very good choice because she was really kind of called the mother of the civil rights movement. Like you were saying, she helped organize a lot of stuff about what was going on in the civil rights movement. And just like Mr. Bay just said, you know, the women were really the movers and the shakers of most of the civil rights movement, but never really got the recognition. You know, my question is, now we have this Black Lives Matter, we have a sister running for vice president. There's a lot of other black women and stuff getting into politics now. Do you see a change in the representation of women in our struggle for civil and human rights?
Yes, I actually do. There's still being, I guess you could say, oppressed a little bit more in a way than people realize, but they're really coming up. They're really, most of the women of this movement right now that we're fighting for police brutality and getting reforms and all that stuff. A lot of those people are women. They're just as equal as the men fighting in these causes, and they're actually getting some more recognition than what they would have gotten years ago, decades ago. They're getting more recognition, and I believe that they're going to be the forefront of this movement, and also in a lot of other things that uses like a higher power, like in politics and stuff like that. You're going to see a lot of women in the coming years being part of it.
Okay, and I would like for you to continue on to your next segment, Walter.
Yes, and the final segment I have for today is a definition. And for today's definition, it sums up what we have been talking about today, and that is ignorance. Now, ignorance is the lacking knowledge or awareness in general, uneducated or unsophisticated. Jane Elliott, what she would always talk about when I see some of her clips and when she her teaching, she would talk about the ignorance of her fellow white people and how white people in general just were ignorant to the racial inequalities and the things that were going on with African Americans during the time. And she even, like I said earlier, she started to notice her own ignorance while doing these type of exercises to help her kids start to understand what was going on in her classroom. She even started to acknowledge her own ignorance. So what I'm saying is, no matter how much you think you know the situation, or if you think you're doing something to help it, if you think, even if you might be a good person, a lot of white people who are like that might actually be ignorant of what's going on. You know, they could be a good person, they could think they're helping to the situation, but they're really ignorant to what's going on right now, or what's going on in the past. And you can't always blame that fully on some of them, because it all deals coming back to teaching and the type of environment you were raised in. When I talked about Ella Baker, she was all about teaching positive and teaching about things that help the next generation, that's going to limit racism and try to stop it. That's what her teaching was, always influencing the youth. And that deals with some white people who are actually racist. They influence the next generation, some of their kids and stuff, and that's how racism still happens, still occurs. And ignorance, if it's not taught to them and they're not experiencing it, that's how you become ignorant. So, you know, some of them is not their fault, but they're going to have to start to understand at some point, and going to have to get out that state of mind, state of thinking.
Mr. Harris.
Yes. Yeah, the only thing I was saying about when you talked about the word ignorant, as far as being uneducated or unknowledgeable about a certain thing, is that ignorance is a choice in my mind. You know, just because you're not educated about a particular subject doesn't mean you cannot become educated, and then your ignorance will go away in that particular area. So, my question for Walter would be, what do you think is the main thing that this society is now ignorant about that could be changed through some kind of education or some kind of knowledge in that area?
Well, now, I guess, really now, if you're ignorant about it, it just means you just don't care, because it's all over the news, it's all over social media, it's all in people's faces now. So people understand what's going on, and they're experiencing firsthand with all the videos and just the movements being going on. So I agree with you a little bit on that it's still, like, it's a choice right now, because people are seeing it and still choose to be ignorant and not care about it. So I do agree it is a choice right now. But what I was saying is, I should have said, like, a couple of decades ago or, like, decades ago when there wasn't a lot of technology or news going around with it and filming, it really came down to what the elders were teaching the kids. I'm talking about, like, the white people, either they were not telling their kids about it and or they were being racist about it and telling them, oh, you should hate these people because they're bad people. And then there were just some people who taught different, taught the young generation different, that these people are not bad people and they deserve equality. So what I'm saying for now, it's a choice now because people are seeing it right now. It's all over the news, all over the media, all over the media.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Oh, go ahead,
Mr. Harris. No, I was just agreeing with his point of view. Because in the age of information, ignorance is definitely a choice. Because you can go anywhere and find out what you don't know. But see, some people are comfortable in their ignorance. And, you know, and that's kind of what we're fighting. Because it's not like they can't find out what the truth is. They choose not to because once you come out of ignorance, you're going to have to change. And people are really reluctant to change. And ignorance keeps you in that bubble.
That's interesting. You know, when I look at, let me just read the intro. Definitions is a segment that provides the listener with words and their meaning so that we can achieve together a common basis to say that we, now listen to this, we care and believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definition controls us, and we must define our existence and not have it defined for us. How would you interpret that? After doing this segment on ignorance, Walter?
Yes, and when you read that intro, it just shows, like, definitions where we're not only given the meaning and we're trying to give people visuals, and every definition that has to have a meaning. And it's up to people if they want to learn the, understand the definition and they want to take note of it, or it's up to people that they just say that they don't care. And especially for this definition today, it's either two sides of it. Either you're an ignorant person, you just don't want to care about it, and you choose not to listen to what our leaders are saying. Our African American leaders are saying that needs to happen, what's going on in society. Or you could join us and you could help us fight this together, because that's the only way this is going to work, if we're all on board with it and we all understand what we all want. Like, we have to give up what everybody wants, what we need. We need this to happen so that people could feel more safe when leaving their house and being with their kids, or just being out on the street. People need to feel more safe. So that's what I'm saying. It's two sides. It's not in between.
Well, part of the word of ignorance is ignore. So I would fall on the side in agreement with Mr. Harris that a lot of people are not just ignorant. They're not just practicing ignorance. They're just ignoring facts. And they're doing it because that's what they choose to do. And change, like Mr. Harris said, is something that a lot of people just don't want to do. Now, I want to take this time and invite our guests who are on the line. And I'm going to go to line 1421. And please introduce yourself. And if you have a comment or a question,
please make it right now. That's 1421. Okay, 1421, no comment, no introduction of yourself. Okay, we're going to move right along. We're going to go to 6778. Any question or comment to the discussion and segments from today? Please introduce yourself.
Hi, this is Calvin Pierce. As always, a great show. It's a great segment. I will hope that, you know, when we talked about the ignorance of people understanding between myth and truth, one of the things that unfortunately that happened not only in white society but black society was the educational part. And I think I'm hoping that one day you guys will do a segment on the daughter of the Confederate. And of course, these was a group of people that decided to rewrite history to their favor, and unfortunately, they was able to get into the school system. And so, if you're constantly taught this, then unfortunately, you get to that level that now you have to be reprogrammed to think differently, because for years this is the way it's always been taught. This is, you know, you'll say, well, it was in our history book. Well, or this part wasn't even there, or even if you talk about the issues with Tulsa, you know, there's no history in any language in a book that actually talks about the situation in Tulsa. So I think that in agreeing with Walter that, you know, then a couple of decades ago, and maybe they may have ignored the fact, but the fact, the fact versus fiction never really came out like it would today. So if you Google Tulsa, the Wall Street, if you Google the slave transportation, more of the information will come up. So a person don't have an excuse today to say that it's not there in front of them in the true sense of understanding what actually took place. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Oh, well, you said a mouthful, and I thank you for your comment. No, but that's great. I thank you for your comment. It was definitely needed. We're going to go to 7035 and ask you if you have a question, comment, and please introduce yourself.
Good evening. A great show. And I did want to make some comment about Ella Baker, because she was very prominent. And, it, you know, it was just a comment, and it just talks about her humility and, you know, what her real goal was. Just a small blurb from a Time magazine article. Just one moment. And here it says, so if Baker was so important, why isn't her name as well known to Americans as Dr. King's or Rosa Parks? For starters, Baker was never interested in the spotlight and devoted no effort whatsoever to seeking recognition. Instead, like all the world's greatest teachers and editors, she enjoyed the pleasure of watching others reach their own potential. And a quote of hers was, I found a greater sense of importance by being part of those who were growing. And that was just it, just a little something I found on Ella Baker.
Well, that's a more than a little something. That's more information, and thank you for sharing. And Mr. Harris, you have any last words?
Well, on only thing I would say is that this was a very interesting show. The Jane Elliott piece really spoke to a lot of stuff that's going on today. And just like the last caller was talking about Ella Baker, she was a great judge of character and was able to find strength in individuals and help motivate them to do stuff. And by not knowing all of this type of stuff, and because a lot of this stuff is new to a lot of people, I don't blame it all on ignorance. but maybe if we would consider other opportunities to learn different things, maybe we can move a little further together as a people. That's it.
Okay. Walter, I'm going to hand it over to you to close out the show.
All right. Make sure y'all tune in Saturday at 8. We're going to have a next show there. It's going to be much more information going on there. And, you know, everybody, I guess on three, we can end with Quest Youth Radio is the best.
Best youth radio.
Absolutely. Great job. Great job, Walter. Thank you all callers and participants in this evening's episode of Quest Youth Radio. I'd like to remind everyone that they can check us out on social media. We're always posting our shows on Facebook, and that's mainly where you can find us. But this particular platform is able to go to your cell phone via text. It can also, it's worldwide, it's global. It's the internet, baby. And thank you very much. And that's a wrap. Peace, everybody.